All right, members, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm going to call StateGovFi to order for Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Representative Kunesh-Podein, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Motion to accept.
Okay, a motion, any discussion? Minutes are adopted. Okay, today we have, what's that? All in favor?
Okay.
All right, there we go. Mere formalities. Today we have minutes here to present. We talk a lot about minute here. I don't know why. No, I do. I know there's going to be several testifiers. For the sake of everybody here, as you rotate in and out, please make sure that you identify yourselves by name. And who's going to start?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Baden will start.
Yeah, Commissioner Baden, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, today. For the record, my name is Thomas A. Baden, Jr., Commissioner and CIO for the State of Minnesota and Minute Services. We're prepared to go through a brief presentation, talk a little bit about the history and what we're up to with Minute Services, and then we're going to dive in a little bit deeper as well as going into talking about the budget requests and the governor's budget this year, and we'll have plenty of time later to field questions.
And just for housekeeping, Commissioner Baden, do you want to field questions as we go along? You want to go through your PowerPoint and then do questions? What's going to be easier for you?
You know, it might be easier to just go ahead and walk through the presentation and then just
okay.
Questions.
We'll do that.
We'll keep it concise, sir, so we've got plenty of time.
Great. We'll do that. Go ahead.
Thank you. To get started, Minute Services. Our mission is we partner with Minnesota state agencies to deliver technology solutions that transform how government provides services for the people in Minnesota. In essence, our catchphrase for us is we're partners in performance. We don't do IT for IT's sake. Everything we do is for the sake of delivering services with our agency partners. Prior to 2011, IT was federated around all of the agencies. In fact, every single agency had an IT shop. Many had multiple IT shops. I was in the Department of Human Services at one point. There were 9 IT shops, plus a few other sub-IT shops within the agency as well. The legislature, in a bipartisan way, consolidated all IT services under the executive branch, under the state CIO, and created Minute Services in 2011. The newly formed agency was renamed as Minute and was comprised of a little over 2,000 people with an annual budget of about $450 million. So who all do we serve? We serve 70 branch boards and commissions and agencies. We serve 90 physical locations with IT and all sorts of diverse lines of business, everything from human services to the state patrol to Department of Health to Department of Natural Resources, a wide breadth of services across multiple agencies. I think it's also important for you to know who we do not serve. We do not serve the legislative body. We don't serve the legislature. We don't serve the courts, and we don't serve the constitutional officers. We don't serve them. However, they do connect and ride on our network. So, in essence, we provide network services, but they all have their own IT shops. I just wanted to let you know that. I thought that would be good contextual knowledge for you. Our strategic priorities for 2017, you have a copy of that in your handouts, and for many of you it should be no surprise, but I will say this, it came as a little bit of a surprise to me. When I came into the role a little over 2 years ago, I came in really wanting to approach citizen-centric, person-centric, update our technology, and really impact how we deliver services as a state. And while I still believe we need to be an integrated, intelligent innovation platform for government, what caught me right away was the vulnerabilities that we have in cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is my number one priority this year. We'll go much deeper into that when we talk about a budget request later on in the presentation. But cybersecurity is still the top number one threat my second year running. The second area that we want to accomplish here in 2017 is we want to finalize the foundation. In essence, we have a number of services that are enterprise services that are shared across all of the agencies in the state, and I want to get those services finalized. In other words, folks, I want to finish the consolidation work that you've tasked us to do. I want to get those enterprise work services done so we can move up up the IT stack, so to speak, and focus our efforts on delivering good modern technology to people where they need it and how they need it, and really impact how we deliver government services. In essence, we want to become a digital service or a digital Minnesota, much like our private industry partners. By the numbers, we support over 35,000 end users, so 35,000 desktops, phones, iPads, laptops, end user functionality. We secure private data of more than 5.5 million Minnesotan citizens, and we secure and manage over 2,800 business applications, and our agencies have over 1,300 locations. So all of those individual users, all of those applications, all of that infrastructure is within what we need to manage. Also with our network, counties, 87 counties connect to the network, 100 school districts, 60 public libraries, and 140 law enforcement locations, all are connected on the network. In other words, we're a very significant IT operation with a large footprint to manage. One of the major changes that we put into place this year, beyond setting those 2017 priorities, is partners in performance seems like such a simple context or a simple idea. It's talking to the people we serve. It's talking to our customers. In fact, we took it to an extreme, is that we've just implemented and put in place an entirely new governance structure, which if you look at each one of these governance areas, we have our business partners on and co-chairing every single one of those committees except for one, which is essentially our executive team. We brought our customers to the table. They're active. They're giving us direction. They're telling us what they need, and we're responding very actively to those needs. A little later on in the presentation today, we'll talk about two of those governance groups that have actually made a big difference for us already. The financial governance team got together, and I remember that morning very well when Jesse called and said, do we open our books to the CFOs across the state? I said, open them up, Jesse. Let's take a look. If there's a better way for us to do our financials, I'm all ears. I want to hear about it. Jesse, let's make that work. The other governance group that came into play this year was around services. We wanted to make sure that we designed our service offerings around what our agencies wanted to and needed to consume to do their agency business. You'll hear a lot more about that today. But in essence, we've changed our approach to doing information technology. We've changed how we do our financials. We've changed how we set up our governance and how we make decisions and how we deliver services to the many agencies that we serve. And last but not least, I want to give you a first kind of a high-level peek into our financials. This first glance, and I'm going to have Deputy Oman go much deeper here real shortly, but if you look at our financials over history, over the course of since 2013 through today, if you look at the total IT spend of minute services, it's been relatively flat. It's been relatively flat while we've been increasing, consumption has been increasing tremendously. I'll just give you three concrete examples, and we can dive into this in much greater detail later. Number one, the network. Network consumption doubles about every 18 months. So already, since me being in this chair, network consumption has doubled. Storage, which we store about 11 petabytes of data, storage is increasing by about 652 terabytes per year. So the storage is increasing, the bandwidth is increasing, and server capacity, the servers that deliver IT to our customers, are increasing at about 35% per year. So while the consumption has been increasing and IT is increasing, and I truly think today is probably, as we look forward from today into the future, we're using about the least amount of IT that we're ever going to use, we've managed to keep our costs flat, and we've also done that through contract savings and cost avoidance as well, and we're going to go much deeper into that as well. But at this point, what I would like to do, Madam Chair, and welcome, Madam Chair, glad to be here with you as well. I would like to bring Deputy Oman in to talk a little bit more about in detail about. I tasked Jesse here this last year and a half with we need to get our financials much tighter. We've got to get much more, we've got to control our costs. We've got to be able to deliver services in a much more managed way. Our customers need to know what they're being charged for and how they're being charged for it. And I would really like to pass the torch right now to Jesse and have him walk through all of the actions that we've taken so far this year, Madam Chair.
Mr. Ullman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
For the record, Jesse Ullman, Deputy with Minute Services. What I'd like to start out with, committee, is really talking about how Minute is set up and structured. We're a hybrid model, and a lot of times what you'll see in business is, do you centralize or do you decentralize? You tend to centralize the services to be able to get economy of scale, to be able to have control, to be able to deliver those in a consistent manner. You tend to decentralize if you want speed to market, individualness, and the ability to really be aligned with individual business units. What our approach has been is a hybrid of those two tacks, trying to pull the best from both areas. We are centralizing services where we really believe that we can show some ROI and economy of scale. And you'll hear those referred to as enterprise services. There's others that are much more individual to the agencies and their mission and what they deliver. You'll hear us refer to that as local services. From an IT perspective, that dividing line is about at the OS level. So pretty much OS and below, we've moved up into the enterprise services. We believe these are more of the commodity IT services in the marketplace today and where we can really drive out some of the value. The others are going to be more individual and less able to get that economy of scale. The chart you have in front of you is showing the breakdown over actual FY16, planned FY17, and then planned FY18. What you'll notice is that there's a growth in the enterprise portion of the pie. What that is really showing is us bringing together those enterprise services that the commissioner mentioned earlier to gain that economy of scale. Right now, the plan is for the start of FY18 to have anywhere from 100% for certain services up to 75% for some of the other ones completely consolidated, and we'll get to an update later on. But roughly, there's approximately $20 million remaining to be shifted out of local budgets and brought into those enterprise service lines. Local services.
I'm going to pause you right there, Mr. Ullman. You said $20 million, so you'd really actually be at 481 then.
So it would be, Madam Chair, members.
Mr. Ullman.
It would be then approximately $174 million in the green portion.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be growth of the total pie. It's more of a shift in the pie. Local services are those that are specific to the agency. That budget is set working with our business partners, with the CDTO, or the senior IT leader that's responsible for the delivery at that level. It is truly a forecast of what the business feels their need is. It is owned by them. It can be adjusted up and down. And it is a forecast. What we do is we actually bill on actuals. So while the forecast may show a certain amount, what we would bill each month is what is actually consumed. Thus, there can be fluctuation both up and down in the budget depending on what the agency would like to do and if their needs change. The cost is a direct pass-through on this. So this is not rate-based. This is going to be a direct pass-through of the cost into the agencies themselves. Enterprise services, in comparison, is rate-based and driven by volume. So one of the changes that the commissioner talked about earlier that occurred this year is that we brought together one of the first governance groups composed of a number of our business leaders as well as some of our IT leaders to really look at what services made sense to them. What would they like to see us offer across the enterprise? What do they feel like? No, that really challenges us to be able to deliver our unique service. So it was input into the process by business for the first time this year and really understanding why some of these we wanted to bring together. One of the other big changes that we have heard in the past is Minute trying to do a one-size-fits-all, forcing an option onto the business themselves and saying, you will take this and that's all you have. Part of what this governance group really worked to do is set what options do agencies want to have, what should they be able to choose themselves, with more around trying to set a floor, a base level of, all right, below this we believe that there are challenges in delivering a technology, there's challenges in being able to sustain it, but above that, that is up to each agency as far as what they may want to add on. This allows the flexibility, for example, in laptops. Some agencies need a very, very basic laptop just right off the shelf. Others, like the State Patrol, need a tough book because of the abuse they put it through. Some of the DNR officers need something that's waterproof because they take it out in the field. All those have different costs. Now each agency can choose from themselves what they want to have with just a base level being set. Again, we're really looking for in these enterprise services in an economy of scale as well as a consistent delivery. It is still built on actuals, so even though there's a forecast or a budget set, that budget's really more of a burn rate or a forecasted burn rate, and that can move up and down depending on, again, the need of the agencies. In fact, I know of one small board that when we were going through the budget process, they originally were located off campus, and their network forecast was higher because they were the only one or agency in that building. They've since moved into the actual campus and are now sharing buildings with other people. Thus, the cost of delivering network to that is reduced, and we bill them on that actual amount, not on that forecasted amount. So when we say enterprise services, we're really talking nine main categories. And in your packets, you actually have sheets that we put out this year. Again, this was a recommendation from the steering team, trying to be a little bit more plain English in describing the service, describing what can be added on, describing what they get with it, and the cost of that. Those areas are going to be mobile device management, desktop bundle, laptop bundle, enterprise software. And when I say enterprise software, that's going to be your Office suite, the OS that runs on your computer, as well as your enterprise email. We also have in that enterprise software bundle the help desk, so the ability to be able to call that. You'll notice there's even tiers with help desk, since certain agencies require 24/7, others require more of just a mainstream business hour support. We also have mainframe, hosting, telephone, wide area network, and local area network. Now, you've heard me talk that we're still working through and in the journey of bringing this all together. And I want to be able to update you on where we are as part of that journey and the progress we've made. I know one of the metrics that a lot of people like to see and look at is how many data centers we have. Pre-consolidation, the state had 49. You can see at this point we're down to 27 of those. In fact, you can see a increase in the last 2 years, partially set up by the priority setting of our commissioner, as well as really making an effort on the low-hanging fruit ones, the ones that were easier to move, or that had the greatest need and were in the most risk posture of needing to get out of the space they're in right now. Our goal eventually is to be down to 5 or 6. Some of that is dependent on some of the regulations that our agency partners have and whether it makes sense to leave them standalone rather than trying to increase cost into one of those centers or not. I will tell you that there is an active OLA review going around data centers, both our enterprise ones as well as some of the ones we're trying to consolidate out of. I know that report hasn't been finalized yet, but I believe that they are expecting to do that in the next 30 days or so. And, of course, then we'll answer and come back with any questions that that report may find or show. Moving on to the progress of those different areas of the services, you can see that there's an active project going on that right now we're forecasting to complete on 7-1. And in fact, in your handouts, you actually have a dashboard that will show a little bit more detail by agency, where they are at with each of the services, and what wave they're in, as well as what sprint they're in for the migration into the enterprise. But right now, that project would have us, as of 7-1, be 100% in these four areas and be a little above 75% completed, consolidated in these other three. Now, this year, with the enterprise services being charged back, there was a lot of changes in our rate package. First is around really who was part of setting those rates. Historically, Minute would put together the numbers and submit it to MMB for their review and final approval. What we've added is a financial steering team that is composed of a number of CFOs from different agencies, MMB, and some of our local IT partners. They were instrumental in walking through some of the changes we wanted to do, whether it resonated with them. They reviewed all of our budget numbers and got to ask if we should or shouldn't have some of those costs in. In fact, they did a great job this year. One of the items we had in was around telephone replacement. We actually were going to plan on replacing telephones once every 10 years, once a decade. We would replace desktop phones for people. I think rightfully so. One of the CFOs said, Jesse, do you really think we're going to have desktop phones in 10 years from now? Great question. And because of that conversation and oversight, we actually removed that out of our budget, out of our rates. And instead, right now, we are only doing replacement on break. So it's literally break fix. And because of some of the conversations there, are exploring a service around soft phone, basically moving away from having a hard set on your desktop to instead using a emulator right on your laptop and being able to do away with that cost completely. This year we also added a third level of review, which is once we have the rates computed, we're sending them to an outside organization to be able to benchmark. And I'll touch on a little bit later the details of that and all of it, but that's a new part we had done this year as well. The other switch we had is that historically our rates tended to come out in June right before the start of the next fiscal year. So take this year for example. Our rate package for fiscal year 18 historically would have come out in June. After your body would have been out of session, and after our agency partners had set their budget. I heard loud and clear this made it problematic for them. They had challenges being able to budget. They couldn't come and talk to you about their true expenses. So what we did is we moved that timeline back to the fall before so that it's actually aligning with the agency's normal budget setting process. In addition, to align with the biennium, and how budgeting works at the state, we actually went with, instead of a one-year, a two-year rate package where the rates are flat over both of those 2 years. We also addressed the last part of an audit finding from the OLA that came out in fiscal year 15. That finding found that Minute had some services they were overcharging for. When I say overcharge, what that means is that they, since we can't make profit, the expenses it takes us to deliver the service, we can only recover enough to be able to pay for those expenses. So there were some services that we were bringing in more than what it cost us to run that service. We also had other services we were undercharging for, i.e. we were literally collecting less money than it took to be able to run those services. At a macro level, it equaled out. We were still break even. But the OLA did find that there's this imbalance in some of our services. We've worked to fix that over the last 3 years. We did a 20% adjustment in fiscal 16. a 40% in fiscal 17, and with this rate package coming out in 18, the final 40%. So that OLA finding will be complete at that point. One of the other big changes, and this was, again, driven by a lot of input from our business partners, is we've baked in hardware replacement costs. They really brought up the challenges of having to forecast and budget for the peaks and valleys of replacing some of this IT equipment, what it would come due. Sometimes it would be unplanned for, and they'd have to pull money out of other programs. Other times they just were challenged with being able to look out years ahead. So we've actually, for these enterprise services, baked the replacement costs into the rates that we have. Now, that replacement cycle is based on really recommendations from the manufacturers. So routers, for example, depending on the class you have, some say there's a life of 8 to 10 years. Some say there's a life of 10 to 12 years, again, depending on the size you have. What we did is take that recommendation, went out to the far right. They said 8 to 10. We said 10 years is what we'll plan for, and we baked that right into the package itself. We also understand we are a chargeback organization, and we have a duty to look for savings everywhere we can. Some of the other things we have baked into this package this year is $2 million reduction in salaries. So, again, the efficiencies we see bringing together the people for these enterprise services, we see we can deliver that service better with less people. So this is not keeping vacancies open. This is truly setting within our budget a target to reduce salaries by $2 million. The other area that we were able to derive out savings is around software. Now, on average, Minute has a cost avoidance of around $15 million a year with contract negotiation with vendors. But just within the enterprise rate package, we were able to, in this package, have a $4 million savings. Now, about $2 million of that was part of that $15 million that we can save across all of them. The other $2 million is, as we brought all these together from the local agencies, there was duplicity. There was more than one software that delivered some of these enterprise services. We were able to eliminate some of that excess software and that duplicate software and realize some savings there as well.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Baden.
To expand on that a little, couple of very good examples. When we had agencies buy, for example, an Oracle product individually, we brought those together, and one of the first things we did, and I may want to call Chris Boozy up to make sure that I've got all the details correctly, but we put together an unlimited licensing agreement in that for a flat fee up front, we estimated the amount of software we would consume at a negotiated discount. However, we consumed nearly twice that much and only had to pay half. So we substantially reduced that Oracle bill with, in this case, it was, I believe it was a $9 million investment that were close to $20 million of product at a substantial discount. And it was triggered out of a request that I made to actually several of our vendors that I just said, we've got to do cost containment. I need some creative solutions for sustaining the cost of the licensing. And I wanted to personally give those guys credit for stepping up and giving us a really good deal in that case. We have another example here a few weeks back that we came together and negotiated a deal for some of the middle-tier IBM licenses. And by combining our procurements together and doing our enterprise buy, we saved $1.5 million on that contract just a couple of weeks ago. So the grouping together and organizing our buys collectively gives us an order of magnitude in that procurement where we have leverage to get better terms and conditions and better rates on those procurements. Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Ullman.
We also try to, with these enterprise services, put in as many levers as we could for our agency partners. so that they can actually be able to pull the levers up and down and control their costs. The first one is they can manage their usage. I will tell you the software enterprise service is literally measured by how many email boxes you have. This is what we're charged by the vendor, and this is what then we would pass on to the agencies. In a lot of cases, we found that there were certain agencies that would like to hold on to mailboxes because maybe they wanted to recover something historically. Maybe they wanted to be able to look back on that. By really showing that they could eliminate those and make a backup in another way, they don't need to pay those expenses anymore, and we're able to reduce that cost to them. The other one is really around those tiered services that we touched on earlier, that there are different levels that we can have. And I know one of the areas that we as an agency can do better and do need to do better is educating our partners on some of the levels that they have. Case in point, there is a license type from Microsoft that's called a kiosk user. It's really meant for people who still need to get email and occasionally use an Office product, but they're not an Office worker. It's more of, I just need to do it infrequently, completely web-based. The plus side is it's about 25% of the cost of a full license, where you're more of the true Office worker it is. So we've already started pilots with DOT around snowplow drivers, DOC around correction officers, people who still need to be able to have a state email and occasionally receive an email but don't need to sit at a computer and work every day. One of the other areas we're working on is reducing the equipment usage. One of the areas and one of our partners we worked with, again, is Department of Corrections. Because of their need in each of the prisons, they would literally have three physical enterprise routers. The first router would be for prison usage, so it was completely isolated from everyone else. The second one was for internal to the prison to run all their systems, so that if they were severed from the outside world, all the systems internally could still work and still run. And then the third was to be able to connect to the outside network. As those are being replaced, instead of doing three physical routers, we've now gone with one that has logical separation built in to the router itself at a software layer. So while the cost of that router that has that ability is more than one of the old ones, it's a lot less than three of the old ones. And again, it's that working with our partners and really trying to educate them on the options they have and what's available to them. I referenced earlier an independent study that we had sent our rate package out to. I will tell you, we had an option. We actually had a couple of other state CIOs reach out to the commissioner and say, we should get together and compare our rates together. We thought about doing that, but what concerned us is that would be five or six states, and then it would be us doing a comparison on ourselves. And we thought it would be much better to reach out to a company who does this, someone who can have a broader reach, and be able to independently take a look at that. The name of the company is Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC. What they did is compared our rates to 31 other states, as well as to a national benchmark service for the private sector. They work to really understand what's in each service when they're comparing it across the states and really try to do an apples for apples and account for any differences that may exist across those different spectrums. What they found when compared to the 31 other states is that 93% of the services were at or below the best value or the average price out there. When you add in the benchmark for private industry, 90% of our services are at or below that benchmark for best value out there. That said, they did point out a number of areas we need to continue to improve and mature in. They said while they could look back and see that this new service description and new packages of services moved us up the maturity pipeline, they still had a ways to go. They really found that we're basically at a level 3 mixed in with some level 1 and 2. They really pushed that in the coming years we further look to consolidate the options that we have out there, simplify those services even more, and look to move to more of an automated ordering online procurement manner for these services so they could be spun up and spun down quickly by the people using them.
Mr. Ullman, I'm going to pause you right there. We do have some members that have some questions, and I'd like to give them a chance to ask those while it's fresh in their minds. Representative Quam.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And when you did the graphs on slide 8, since you do have a breakout of things such as hardware, software, and then management or services, as you go for the historic data, especially the when you have to pull in new software or new hardware, those bumps might be educational for us when looking at the, you know, the other sheets. And then on 13, you have the data centers, and I was wondering if there's any clarification of consolidation versus maybe going out to a vendor or third party utilization for cost savings.
Representative Quam, I'm going to ask you where you're at because I am not seeing it. What are you on? Slide 13, page 13, what page? Where are you at?
Slide 8 is page 4. Slide 13 is page 7.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Commissioner?
Madam Chair and representatives, we can get that first slide broken up by hardware, software, services. We can get that. So I made a note for us to do that. The other question was, are we going to utilize cloud services to mitigate this challenge that we have about managing costs and being effective in enterprise services? The answer is yes. To begin with, we were one of the first, if not the first, state that went to cloud services for our enterprise communications, email, SharePoint, Link, those type of activities, and we're now in the midst of moving to the government computing cloud for Microsoft for those services. We've also done software as a service with one of our healthcare applications. So the complete package is a cloud-sourced application that we're working there. We're going to continue to look at cloud very aggressively, but we also need to look at them very carefully in that I believe we'll end up being a hybrid organization. There'll be some things that we're going to need to keep on-prem just simply from compliance perspective, from PUP 75, from CGIS compliance. And while we're working with some of our cloud vendors to get through that, those are still some challenges. But we have to look at each one. We want to make sure we've got an option of, we actually have two cloud vendors that we're working with right now, and we're doing an aggressive pilot with one of those cloud vendors when we look at infrastructure as a service. But I think that's just the beginning of what cloud offers us, actually. I think the next generation of cloud is the tapestry of instrumentation of software tools that are available to you that you don't have to run out and buy, that you already have available to you, and you pull those components together to build solutions. We're going to have to change how we do procurement. We're actually going to have to change our attitude about how we build solutions, and I think that's the real promise of cloud, far beyond the infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, or software as a service. That's where I think the great promise is beyond.
Representative Quam. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at at an Office of Legislative Auditor report, and I see Mr. Nobles is in the audience here. I just want to make sure I understand it correctly. It's a very recent one, December 2016, and they reviewed the period of July 2014 through March 2016, answering a couple of questions. One was, did the Minute Services Office have adequate internal controls to ensure accurately bill state agencies for their services? That was one question. The other one was, did you comply with legal requirements that they tested? And it seems to me, if I read the report correctly, the answer to both questions was yes. And to me, that seems like a pretty important report, in as much as we put a lot of stock in what our auditor says. Did I read that report correctly?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, representatives, I believe you were referring to the audit that pertains to the financials around staff. To begin with, whenever Mr. Nobles and his team does an audit with us, I take him very seriously. He's tough, but he's very fair, and I respect his work. And therefore, I respect the outcome of that. And, you know, I believe, and we believe through the audit, that that was all handled legally and correctly.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just one follow-up. Were there any findings and or recommendations with that report then?
Commissioner? Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, member. No, there was not. Not with that report.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, which suggests that the auditor was quite satisfied with what he reviewed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Noble's here if you want him to come down.
No, I think I understand the report.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask a couple and we'll come back to as we go along. To the testifiers, you talked early on about the consolidation of data centers, and I had the opportunity to tour one of your data centers before we started session. The whole goal behind consolidation was to drive cost, not just in labor and other stuff, but also just iron on the floor. You've constricted that down to, I think you said 27. Sorry. How much have you saved in that consolidation versus your current spend? Because ostensibly it should go down, and now I want to make sure that it's not headed back up again because storage is getting cheaper. Help me understand, help us understand how much cost you've driven out of data center storage and all those things.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, to begin with, it's mainly that we've cost avoided. So if you look at the consumption, you know, our overall costs have been relatively flat. We've gained the efficiencies that Deputy Ullman spoke of earlier, some in staff savings, some in cost avoidance. The rest is that the consumption has just increased. So therefore, we're consuming more, and we've kept costs flat. Part of the rest of the answer you may be looking for is that we, the data center that we, space that we have leased, as well as the areas where we want to leverage cloud for infrastructure as a service, there is enough capacity there that we should be able to move that in and actually drive down those costs by moving the other, you know, from 27 down to 6. So there's efficiencies to be gained there.
Representative Nash?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to move on to another question. And just, I agree with the whole notion of consolidation. It should ostensibly save us money in the long run. I was impressed with the data center. I thought it was a job well done. I'm looking forward to seeing other things moved in because that's where a lot of money can be saved. Mm-hmm. But speaking of money, and I know that Mr. Eichten has been here for a number of our other hearings and reviews, we've heard a lot from agencies of all kinds that they don't understand how they got to the quote that they were given for this biennium. Two, we've heard from some that they can't afford your services, which is mind-boggling. Three, they say that, one veterans, I believe, said that there was this discrepancy of, I think it was $5 million. And I just want to hear from you all, go down each of those, help us understand those questions, if you would, please.
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, a couple questions there. Let me make sure I cover all of them, and please let me know if I miss any of them. First, with MDVA, and I believe that there was a letter sent as a follow-up, actually, to this committee where they corrected themselves on that, in that out of that $5 million, it was about $2 million that was given back by Minute, not that entire $5 million. They said they had sent that over. I hope you guys have had an opportunity to receive that. Out of that $2 million, what it really pertained to was salary savings. So, again, we only charge back on actuals, and those budgets are a forecast board. And there was a number of positions that MDVA had to fill, and some of those took a lot longer to be able to fill up. And because of that, as they were budgeted out, you actually accumulated this cost savings around salary. And because we are a chargeback, we wouldn't just take that money and go spend it on something else. Instead, it is given back to the agencies themselves. Now, with MDBA in particular, we saw a historic trend where we have consistently underspent to that budgeted amount after a number of years. And we really sat down with our business partners there and said, look, we see this pattern repeat itself over and over. And for this budget period coming up, they've actually reduced their local budget by $1.4 million to be in more in line with what historically they've been spending and seeing in those areas. As far as the other agencies and you know what they can afford and descriptions of services, first, I think you're absolutely right. We need to do a better job at explaining the benefits. There's definitely been some areas we've fallen down where the agencies have not been able to articulate to you and to others what benefits they're getting, what are the advantages, and what's truly in there. I really do think that's on us. We need to do a better job of explaining that and explaining it in business terminologies, not always IT terminology, which I think at times, while we love to talk about, not everyone loves to hear about. So we need to make sure we're flipping that conversation and doing a better job there. Among the small boards, which I know that this committee really has purview over, we're happy to dive into any one in particular, but I saw after our conversations, Representative, a number of themes as I dug into what was going on there. So I'm going to try to give some of the buckets that what I'm seeing here. One of those is there's several of the boards where their costs are going down. The Bureau of Mediation Services and Sentencing Guidelines Commission, both are going down. Now, why? It's because they were already on the service going into this fiscal 18. So they had been on the service prior. So they were already paying for a service, and part of those efficiencies we gained, that desktop support, actually went from in fiscal year 17, so current year, a cost of $160 a month down to, if you're using a desktop, $58 a month. If you're using a laptop, $78 a month, and now includes hardware replacement baked into it. So those agencies that had already been on the service are now seeing that efficiency gain of getting more volume onto it and actually see their rates going down. There's another group that I think is a little harder for us to capture what they traditionally had been spending on IT. The Work Comp Court of Appeal, the Indian Affairs Council, they would rely on, the Disability Council and the Latino Affairs, they would rely on a contractor that they would only bring in as needed. And they wouldn't proactively patch or keep up with the computers. Instead, what they would do is literally just set it up, and if they broke, they would call them up. Now, that wouldn't have been captured historically in the IT line because it wasn't something that was under our purview. So for them, I think it's working to really try to compare that apples to apples and not the oranges to apples that we can be looking at. There is another group, and that's where the Work Comp Court of Appeal and the Indian Affairs comes in, where they had nothing before. They literally had no one truly supporting them. So for the first time, they do now have a service. And these are some of the agencies that we brought up last year as part of our security ask, in that they can't afford some of the basic IT services. We called them the weakest link last year. Now, last year was a non-budget year, and that was part of why we included it in our security ask. And we learned a lot about, you know, asking an off-budget year, and with it now being a budget year, we took that out and said, you as agency should bring that up in your operational, because it's really you describing your business need to have these services to be able to do that. But there are some of these that historically they didn't have a contractor supporting them. What they had was best effort from Minute. So they weren't paying for a service. It was literally, if we had free cycles, we would go and try to help them. As I've dug through this, I think it really has led to some of the historical perception, especially of how bad our services could be. I mean, can you imagine being an agency and you're not truly on the service, but you're dealing with minutes, so you feel like you are getting service for them, but it's literally what leftover time we have and not really truly being integrated in or delivered on that. And then the fourth category is we saw some of these agencies are actually going up in consumption. So human rights is a perfect example. If we looked at truly what they had in fiscal 17 and just looked at fiscal 18, they actually would have went down in money. But what they're adding in, I believe you guys saw in a change item, is they are adding a new office location, which means they need network connectivity to that. They need computers to support the workers that they had looked to hire in that area and everything you'd need for an office supporter. They're also looking to add a new language translation line. I believe it's Somalian to English and adding that service on. That's something, again, we procure from the private industry and basically we just tack on their phone bill. Disability Council is another one in this area in that they are looking to redo their websites and they've added $22,000 for a website redesign. Now, if they don't do that, we won't bill them for it. Again, it's a forecast looking forward and it's only on the consumption we'd have. So if there's an individual one, we're happy to dive into those. But when I started digging into it, it seemed to be one of those four categories is really what we found.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Ullman, you know, we spoke in my office yesterday, and we talked about how the fact that this was really kind of a dropping of the ball on how to communicate with the people who are your clients. You know, I run an industry, I run a business, and I always make sure that I'm on the same page and my customer knows what it is that I'm charging them and why I'm charging them and how we arrived at those numbers. And I would appreciate you fixing that as quickly as possible so that folks who come here and they're sharing their budgets with us know within reason, because they're not IT folks, but within reason what the heck they're asking for. And along those lines, we have heard from pretty much every agency, large and small. They come in and it's almost like they got a note from their mom that says, here, go ask for this number. I'm really curious, and I think most of us are, is how did we arrive at the cybersecurity spend? And I know Mr. Boosie is here, so he might as well just come on up. But, you know, I think we've heard from people, they have no idea. And I know that the governor's budget came out with a large cyber piece in there. And a lot of us are wondering, well, did you work with them? How did you arrive at that? How did, you know, so how did we arrive at this cyber number? And, you know, I fully understand that we've got a huge enterprise and full of very interesting and juicy data that we have to protect. But, again, we've got to let these folks know who are coming to ask for their budget, why they're asking it, and what does it do? Because from my perspective, they're clueless on how you arrived at this number that you gave them.
Mr. Boosie? Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, you're absolutely right. You know, we talked in your office, and that is an area we need to improve in. It was very disheartening to me to really hear, and I watched some of the testimony, them not being able to explain what they're getting, and it's an area we're going to actively look to correct as soon as possible. Just a question for the members. I have two slides left, and then we'll get into the change item around security. Would you rather move to...
No, we're going to do questions for now.
Okay.
And I'd like, Mr. Boosie, if you can comment on how you arrived at the $10 million mark, or commissioner or deputy commissioner, whoever would like to answer that question, for Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christopher Boosie. I am the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Minnesota. So, first of all, to set the record, the baseline understanding of where the security request is, the total amount of the request, we put together in your packet a sheet that helps everybody understand what are the components of the request. So that would be helpful to start by pulling out the one-page handout that's called Securing the State Legislative Request. So with the sheet as a backdrop, I think one of the most important things to start with to address Representative Nash's question is that the request that we're putting before with the Securing the State Initiative is a general fund request.
Madam Chair, I don't think we have that.
No, we're looking for it here. On the last tab, members, in this book, cybersecurity. Mr. Buzzi.
Madam Chair. So starting to address Representative Nash's question, the initiative, the Securing the State request, is a general fund request. So this is a request to have money appropriated directly to Minnesota IT Services to provide these cybersecurity services on behalf of state agencies. So when it comes to the services that we're looking for in this request, there should not be agencies coming to committees asking for cybersecurity money to perform these particular services. So going into this request, there's two major parts of the request. First of all, there is a piece of the request that talks about getting Minnesota IT Services to the point where we can consolidate into the secure data centers. Earlier in the presentation, you saw a slide that showed that represented Minnit going from 49 data centers down to 27. Part of this request is moving us from 27 down to the 5 or 6 target data centers. That's a one-time request to get a pool of money to build out the rest of the environments with the hardware, the software, and the licensing to move agencies into secure managed data centers. So that's the first piece of the request. The second piece of the request talks about beefing up our enterprise security program to address the types of threats that we're facing today on a continuous basis. And that part of the request includes three types of money. First of all, it includes some money to improve our security tool capabilities to address some of the problems that we're seeing on a day-to-day basis. First of all, on the tool side, to give you an example, today we have lots of advanced persistent threats, hacker activities that we see on a day-to-day basis. We're looking for the ability to improve our monitoring capabilities across state government. Today, there's still parts of our environment that we don't have complete monitoring in. We're also looking for capabilities to find some of the advanced malware that gets into your environments today. So those are a few examples of the types of software that we're looking at as part of the request. We're also looking for some professional services as part of that request as well. A couple examples of that are today in our Security Operations Center, we do the best that we can with the resources at our disposal. But I think everybody recognizes today that cybersecurity attacks happen 24/7, 365. And we're looking for some professional services to hire a contracted vendor that can watch our networks after hours. We need to have eyes on the glass all the time, given the state of the cyber threats today. And then finally, we are looking for some personnel as well. One of the unfortunate realities that we're facing today after the consolidation of all the agencies is that today, when you look at the cybersecurity spend, one of the realities that we're facing is that when consolidation happened, outside of some of the few largest agencies, the vast majority of the small and mid-sized agencies that came under Minnit's purviews had no dedicated cybersecurity personnel. They had absolutely no security budget. So Minnesota IT Services inherited a large group of agencies that didn't have any money for tooling that we need to watch over their areas, and we don't have people to do that work. So we also have a component in this request for personnel as well to help watch over the small and mid-sized agencies that didn't have capabilities when they moved into IT consolidation. And there's a couple other FTE in that as well. Today we have a forensic team that has two individuals in there. They have a huge caseload on a day-to-day basis of forensic work that they're undertaking. We desperately need a third forensic investigator on our team. And then finally, we have one FTE in a request as well that is for more support for the state's fusion center. So on a typical day, because we oversee lots of networks and we get lots of cybersecurity alerts through our threat intelligence feeds for lots of governments across the state of Minnesota, school districts, law enforcement organizations, counties, we get these threats on a day-to-day basis, and we need to get those threats down into organizations so that they can actually act on that intelligence. Today we're doing a best effort basis to try and get information down into the fusion center and use that existing channel. But it's very clear to us today that we need to have a dedicated person now to use our fusion center law enforcement capabilities to move that intelligence out into the local units of government. Yesterday, I think, was a perfect example of why this is important. And we had a situation where the city of Bloomington had a cyber attack that dealt with stolen W-2 data. That was threat intelligence that we had earlier through some of our channels that we passed on to all of the chief financial officers in a couple different formats to get that information out into state government. But we need to find ways to get threat intelligence out to other units of government as well, particularly local units of government that don't even have the resources that we do at the statewide level, and that's where that last FTE comes into play.
Representative Ash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Boozy, I'm looking at your, in the budget book that we have here, and you're essentially asking for 18 total new cyber employees?
Mr. Boozy?
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, that is correct.
And Mr. Boozy, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Boozy, what's the average compensation for these folks? I'm just trying to get a baseline for that.
Mr. Boozy?
Madam Chair, committee members, I don't have that exact number offhand, but I would be glad to go back and get that information for you. I imagine, as all of you are aware, cybersecurity professionals are in high demand. These individuals generally have some fairly substantial salaries. One of the things that we're doing in our organization today is we're really trying to leverage top talent coming out of colleges and universities as well to help with our program. But I will get back with that number, Representative Nash.
And Representative Nash, too, if you look at the request, it looks like a total initial impact to the state is $22 million. And then ongoing for the FTEs, it looks like it's $4.7 million ballpark for you.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And Mr. Boozy, you know, I've been critical of MNIT for a lot of different things for the last number of years. I'm not critical of the effort for cybersecurity, and you've never heard me say that I am. I want to make sure that folks understand cyber is a big deal. And we have, as a state, a lot of really interesting, or folks would others use other words, interesting data that's personally identifiable information, and I want to make sure that we do this right. But here's my big question is, I want to make sure that, you know, you've talked about outsourcing after hours. I want to make sure that before we move or appropriate anything, that we also see a side-by-side comparison of what outsourcing looks like compared to these 18 folks, because you're going to outsource after hours. I'd like to know what that number looks like before you do that. And I have one more question, then I'll be quiet for a little while and let other members ask. Came up recently, can you tell us what the Odyssey Fund is and how the Odyssey Fund gets its money and what it is and what you're doing with it? And it's probably a better question for the commissioner.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, committee members, the Odyssey Fund is a fund that's set up in statutes. I believe it was in the 2011 statute. It may actually predate that, 2006.
And Ms. Roberts can help us. Ms. Roberts can help us there because she's been doing some research for this as well.
Great. The intention of the Odyssey Fund is that oftentimes IT projects don't work perfectly within the biennium. And it's agency funds that are directly dedicated to a specific IT project so that those funds cannot be turned and used to buy chairs or anything else. They have to be exactly what they were dedicated for. If those funds are not used, they get returned to the agency. The way we've used that as an instrument, I'll give you a really good example with Office of Management and Budget. Right at the end of the last biennium, we were going to buy some middle-tier engineered hardware services from a company. And companies also know that it's the end of the biennium. So, you know, it was an attempt to try to squeeze a few extra bucks out of it. We put the money into the Odyssey Fund. We concluded the negotiation and the agreement about 6 weeks later and saved the state $175,000. So essentially what that the fund is that we use a very disciplined process as we put money in. It's for a specific purpose. It can only be used for that specific purpose. It's the agency's dollars, and it has to be committed to the purposes of which the agency's dedicated to it. And then last year during legislative session, we also added a layer of that we would present anything that goes into there to a legislative oversight committee as well. The fund is managed by the Office of Management and Budget. However, we've got a lot of the documentation and the process of how all of that works.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, just want to know, so the money was appropriated, didn't get spent, went into the Odyssey Fund. For the spend that is in the Odyssey Fund, is that money also requested in the next biennium for things that the old biennium money was purchasing? That was my question.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and representatives, no. It can only be used for the specific purpose in which it was dedicated to, and certainly we would not double ask for something that we've already been appropriated for.
Representative?
I'm good for now. Well, I know other members have questions as well.
Representative
Uglum? Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for the Commissioner, how in the heck did you guys ever end up with 2,000 staff? That makes you one of the biggest agencies that we deal with. 2,000 staff. How did that happen?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and committee members, it was your work that did it. It was bipartisan legislation and the governor's signature. And the way it was approached when the agency was created was that we basically surveyed out to everyone that worked in agencies, and anyone that worked in an IT classification pretty much automatically came in. There were other folks that worked in kind of fringe, kind of worked both sides of the equation, were both business and IT. We looked at each one of those and worked with the agencies that they worked for and determined whether or not they were considered really information technology folks or not. And then we made sure that each one of those had an IT classification within the bargaining agreement and the way those collective bargaining agreements are set up. And to add to that, one of the things that we accomplished this year, and I'm very proud of this work. We've got more work to do on that front, but we actually changed the structure of MINUT to reflect what we really should look like as an agency. To begin with, there's only one CIO. There's only one. Which was I think, an important change because it reflects how this organization would look like if we were built from scratch. We streamlined and set up our executive staff. One of the other big moves that we did is the IT leaders that were in agencies are now called Chief Business Technology Officers because essentially their infrastructure role now folds under our IT operations, and their job is to literally bring solutions for that agency as an IT leader. So we reset that structure. We also standardized our project managers, BAs, and QAs. We're in the midst of standardizing all of our position descriptions around supervisors. We're working very hard to structurally set up the way our organization should have been set up. It should have, had we started from scratch. So the long answer to your question, it was an enormous challenge that's still a work in progress, but even in the last year, I think we put a major dent on that.
Representative
Uglum? Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, with these 2,000 people you support, you said that you support over 35,000 end users. If my math's correct, that's about 17 and a half people for each IT person. In the private industry, those figures go from anywhere from 70, 80, way up over 100 in various companies and things in terms of that ratio. Why is it that you have 2,000 people supporting, you know, an average of 17 and a half individuals? It seems awfully high to me when you compare it with other organizations.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, committee members, if you were just looking at desktop and help desk, your numbers are more correct. But these 2,000-plus folks also manage 2,800 applications and 50,000 devices. So there's an operational component of network servers, databases, middleware, security. There's those pieces. There's 2,800 applications, and there's help desk and desktop support. And I think the numbers, if we're reading the same type of things, the numbers would be just around more help desk and support. And I could get the numbers of that ratio for you.
Representative.
Chair, well, thank you. I think in many cases those numbers include much more than health or help desk support. I have another question on page 6. Under enterprise services and things, you mentioned return on investment in terms of the benefits and the costs. And could you expound a little bit more on your ROI for the committee, and then how you're figuring that return on investment and what it is?
Commissioner,
Madam Chair, and committee members, we're actually starting to change how we look at it. To begin with, a couple of years ago, but now we have. I've got every project, so I can see every project. We've got visibility on our 350 projects. I can see them all. I get reported by the major projects every couple of weeks, the top 5 or 6. I meet with the project directors and leaders and get updates from them to help assure that they're staying on track. We also now have a application portfolio, which we didn't have up until very recently. So now we can look across the entire breadth of all of our 2,800 applications and start the life cycle plan. Many of those, as you know, are getting long in the tooth and need replacement, and we've got to more proactively manage those applications. Third, within IT operations under Tom Schaefer, we want to be industry competitive, and that's why we actually went out and had the external benchmark. I'm a competitive son of a gun, and I task these folks with making sure that our rates are competitive with private industry, and where we're not competitive and if private industry can do it better, faster, and less expensive, I want to look at all of those options. And, oh, by the way, I want them to compete with each other for it as well. So that's part of how we're turning. The rest of how I want to start discussing technology, and this is maybe something for everyone here in this room, is starting to look at technology as a whole. Minute and infrastructure is just one piece of the puzzle. And do we start to look at all of the applications going into all these different committees? Do we start to manage legislatively IT from a different perspective? And then do we start to measure it not only from the disciplines of project management and good benchmarking, but also measure it the way business would measure it? And that is, what's the net present value of that application or solution? What was the time frame from when it was an idea to when it solved the problem, but when it also, what was the promise of that application, and did we measure and meet that promise? And start to behave in that manner with how we look at IT as we move forward. That's our turning point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, yeah, but you didn't answer my question. You mentioned that you talk about return on investment. That's a term that's thrown around in business so much. But my question to you was, do you calculate return on investment, and how do you do that? So we know that the state is getting a decent return. And you know, we can compare that with other IT services corporations or other business costs on return on investment. So do you calculate that, and how do you do that?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and committee members, at this point, we're focused. I can talk in much more detail around the 9 enterprise services. So we look at our costs, and we look at our costs within each division. In fact, each of our division leads have been tasked with making sure their costs are under control. Therefore, we measure our costs against rates, and then we compete in our rates around those enterprise services. And therefore, any investments that we would make along the way, we need to make sure that we calculate full ROI, and we've got a competitive rate around those 9, particularly enterprise services. We've got to mature, and we've got to move up the stack to the other solution areas.
Representative
Ogle? I'll get off that subject and go to one other one. Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned in this independent rate study that you were compared against 31 other states in terms of being competitive in rates and everything else. Are there 31 other states that have consolidated IT services like Minnesota?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and committee members, they're actually all the states are at some point in that journey. A couple of states have done full up or full consolidations. I think Michigan is well down this path and ahead of us. When CIO Takai was there, she was a model for how to do IT consolidation. I've learned a lot from her about how to do it. Another model, what's the southern state? Georgia. Georgia has another model. They're down that path a little bit further. Utah, under Steve Fletcher, and they've just changed CIOs here again recently, but they're well down that path. I've actually sought out advice from them, and as well as Utah. I've also talked to a lot of our private industry folks about it. I consult regularly with our major players. In fact, I spent a couple of hours with Mark Sunday, the CIO from Oracle, and a lot of our plan and direction. He gave me a lot of golden nuggets to work with.
Representative. One final question, Madam Chair. Thank you. Well, if these 31 other states, and we do this study, and these 31 other states are halfway down the path or a quarter of the way down the path or whatever, how do you get valid comparisons out of that in terms of the rate study when they're all different?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and committee members, we tried to compare apples to apples. And that actually was, if there's a big challenge when you're doing a rate study, is making sure you're comparing apples to apples. And we looked at, like I said, we looked across 31 states. Just at a high level, I look at a couple of extremes when I talk to my peers. One state that's worked their way down to two data centers. They're looking at, they've looked at more like about $40 million in cost avoidance. And when I think about what we've cost avoided, I think we're on a trajectory to do that as well, why consumption has increased. Where I look at another state that actually decided not to do data center consolidation, they have 81 data centers, and their costs are reflective of that.
Representative? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner, I have some of the same concerns that Representative Uglem highlighted here, and I'm just going to turn to if you're looking in your packet, it's the response to the letter that Senator Kiffmeyer and I sent to the commissioner. And I'm looking at particular the history summary of the FTEs. And when you look at 2017, your agency is now at 2,214 FTEs. And if you compare that to 2012, that was 1,957. And so you're going on a path of increasing more. You have an additional request for another 18 FTEs for your cybersecurity piece. This was not really the intent of the legislation that was passed with bipartisan support between Representative Kahn and Representative Downey. The idea was that with consolidation, you would be able to shrink the size and manage things more effectively. And yet I see a trajectory that has us going up, up, and up, and not really solving the problem of making things more compact. The other concern that I have, and I've had this conversation with you in my office, is the fact that when I ask you how does this compare to prior to the consolidation, and you say that you can't give me the numbers for that, I find that really problematic because I know when you guys came and talked to us in 2015, you said you were still in the process of analyzing what all the different agencies had and then how you were going to try and meet those needs. And if you had done that process of analyzing what each of those agencies had, you would have had a clear idea of what the FTEs were that were dedicated toward this function. And so I'm looking still for the historical perspective, because if you've done that study, because that's what we talked about back in 2015, I remember that conversation very well in committee, talking about how cost savings, not just the contract piece, of what you did in cost savings, but there should be actual savings from the consolidation itself. And I'm just, those are some things that I'm concerned about still. With that, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of the questions have already been asked, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure which testifiers, but back to the FTE thing, just having some type of an accounting for those that were eliminated from all of the other agencies relative to those that were added was one of them. But secondly, just looking at the governor's budget book, and seeing that as not that long ago in fiscal year 14, it looks like the total expenditures were $153 million, which are, that's a lot of money, but now we're up to $454 million. And in studying just the GovOps agencies, I've not seen a whole lot of decrease in their operating cost. Now, I would assume that someplace along the line you'd expect, hopefully, that you would see $300 million worth of operating costs disappear if indeed this thing is being consolidated and more efficient. And so I guess the question would be, kind of paralleling off of this, is could we have an accounting of the FTE actual changes from, say, 13 till 17, as well as the operating cost that's been eliminated at the different agencies as well, and then you see how it balances to this?
Commissioner. Mr. Ullman.
Madam Chair, members, if I can touch on a couple of those questions, I might be able to shed some light. Madam Chair, with the FTE count in particular, I think we can go right back to the consolidation point, because you're right, that was kind of that day one, go out and identify who's there. And that was part of why when we replied to you, we didn't want to just run the report out of SWIFT. We actually wanted to be able to provide a second graph that really showed from a pure HR perspective how many people were there at that point. The challenge we've had with some of the financial reports going backwards, and even why you see some of these results jumping like this as you're going forward, what you're referencing there, is financial consolidation has still been occurring over the last few years. Case in point, there are three agencies that just moved their salary budgets from their local area to being paid out of minute accounts, 7-1 of 16. So I know that some of the reports, when you'd run it out and some of what we provided you, you'd actually see these big jumps as that movement's occurring. That's part of why we wanted to add the view of that really, I think, got to your question, which is how many people were there at that point. The second one around people, remember, we're also a chargeback organization, which means a lot of this is agencies setting what they believe their demand of IT work is. Especially on the local areas, you'll see that them setting the budgets is where they'll say, we need more, we need less. Now, if they can't project forward that they'll have long-term funding for positions, then we make use of consultants a lot. We actually have over 400 consultants right now, and that number goes up and down depending on project budgets and what people have to spend. Where you have seen a reduction actually in staff, and I referenced it earlier, especially in these economy of scale, these enterprise services, we have been able to cut staff numbers and reduce and work to drive down there. That same problem of what you're seeing is that while you'll see a shift of what's being flagged in those IT accounts as the spend and you see it grow up, the agencies are still spending that same amount. It's just now they're being charged back for it. So while it would have lived in their account before, they still have it in their budget to be able to pay those bills going forward. So it's not necessarily that we've swept that money away. We don't take any of that money into our accounts. Again, we're a bill back, so at this point what we're doing is really giving that bill back to them. They're now paying that bill going forward. That's why that earlier graph that I think was slide 5 or 6 showed what we can really determine was the IT spend historically over those multiple years.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, well, and I realize being new to this is really confusing because running a small business is nothing like something. When I see 454,000, I think it's 454,000. In this case, it's 454 million. So, you know, if you're off 10%, it's a lot of money. And that's why it's trying to get at exactly how all this has transpired, because what I see is something that's gone from 153 million, which is a lot of money, to 300 billion dollars over a period of a few years and increased in a bunch of employees. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, is making it easy for maybe somebody like me to understand so that it's truly transparent what has happened here. I am curious, you mentioned that you've got a number of jobs outsourced. Is that in the FTE count then?
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, no, that wouldn't be. FTE count is just truly FTEs.
Representative Vogel.
Okay, Madam Chair, thank you. So where would that be then? Would it be in the operating expense?
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, member, I think you're looking at the budget sheet. Can I just ask what page you're looking at?
I'm looking at the governor's book, the governor's budget book, and looking on page 15 of that. But I guess it was just more of a general question as to where where it's included then, because if it's not in the compensation, it must. I would assume it's in the operating expense. Again, it's a little difficult for me because these things are not really broken down, so you can't really see an itemization. But just curious where that's accounted for.
Mr. Ullman.
Madam Chair, members, it would usually be under professional services. I know we had an ask earlier to really break down the categories by year on that chart we showed. So as part of that, we can have that category and really define where those different categories are for you. I think that would be more helpful and maybe get to what you're looking for.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, madam. Yeah, that would be helpful. Okay. And just one other thing. I did notice, again, going back to the governor's budget proposal and looking at the estimate for 2017, we're up to $454 million in expenditures from $340, so $100 million. But when I look at your transfer, this one, in the big booklet thing, there's only been $145 million transferred so far. So do you expect, now we're two-thirds through the year, because it says 217 represents amounts collected to date, so I'm assuming February 1st, are we assuming that there's going to be another $300 million that will be coming in, if indeed these transfers, because the transfers kind of match up close to what I'm seeing for the expenditures from the minute services account, the 5500 account. They tend to match up fairly close, but now we're at $145 million, and this year would suggest $454.
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, I think we're going to need to get back to you with what exactly you're looking at there, just so that I can make sure I'm answering it appropriately and getting you the right information. I don't want to...
Does Mr. Eichten have some input on that piece?
Pardon me?
Yeah, what page? Again, you said you're in the governor's, though, book, and I don't know if that ties out correctly.
Mr. Ullman, it's the budget book. What page represents
It's the budget book. It's on page 16 of the minute services tab under.
And then he's also comparing it to the response that you guys provided to us from Senator Kiffmeyer and I.
So, Madam Chair, yes, if you go down to under 5500 there on page 16, estimated expenditures for 17 are $454,218,000. And then I'm just comparing it to the transfers already made, because the transfers in the prior years are pretty close to what was here.
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, that helps. Thank you. So what you're seeing here is a reflection that we are and had not been in those years financially consolidated. So while the IT spend, and you saw in that line graph, has remained pretty flat, that was actually living in minute accounts has been growing as we get it moved out of the agency's budgets. Now, again, they still have to have it budgeted to be able to pay for it. But that's where you're seeing that growth there to really get up to that full amount that you're seeing toward the end there as we are continuing to grow it. I think a perfect example is there was almost, I want to say about $90 million in payroll with those three agencies that hadn't been moved yet over into minutes 5500. They were still being paid for out of the direct agency's account until 7/1/16. I think it might be helpful if we get you a artifact that shows on what days what agencies moved their payroll over, and then when they moved their the rest of their expense over as well, because that's really then showing you the whole picture of when it's getting shifted in those accounts.
Representative Vogel.
I guess that's good for now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just getting back to the whole FTE component, too, and looking at the response letter that you guys provided to me, just looking at DHS, in 2012 they went to 500, they were at 531, and now they're up to 726. So you're looking at almost 200 new FTEs. And, you know, you said that you leave it up to the agencies to some degree, it sounds like, to determine what they need. But at what point do you guys determine, I mean, that's part of the consolidation. Otherwise, we're just pretending that it's consolidated and it's really not.
Right.
So at what point do you guys insert yourselves into this process to say this is unsustainable and this doesn't meet the consolidation? Because otherwise it's just agency by agency still determining what they want for IT, whether they need it or not.
Sure.
Mr. Owen.
Madam Chair, members. Specifically in those enterprise services, that has really now been taken out of the agency's hands, and you see the further consolidation there, because we really do see that economy of scale from that perspective. There, they're just getting a service paid back by a rate, and what we use to provide that service behind the scenes, be it a outsourced vendor, be it some FTEs, and really a combination of a lot of those, that is more what would be in our hands. On the local side, we do have those conversations. Again, it's a request by business. Do they have long-term funding? Do they have short-term funding? Is it project-based where it may go away? And it's really having those conversations directly with them to set what we'll be at.
Okay. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Owen, you met with myself, staff, Representative Quam was there yesterday, and you gave us a number yesterday that you said you were 50% outsourced from things that you're doing. And to pick up on Representative Vogel's point and the chair's point, if you're 50% outsourced and you're growing FTEs, you know, what would it look like if it wasn't outsourced? I mean, outsourcing is, I would gather, an admission by you that a managed service provider in the area can do that job cheaper and faster and better than you can, and yet now we're seeing 50% of what you're doing, and Mr. Oman, that was your number, 50% yesterday. You're 50% outsourced, yet you're swelling the number of employees, and I'm kind of curious as to what's going on.
Mr. Oman.
Madam Chair, members, so from an enterprise perspective, and I think we talked yesterday the two different numbers, when you look at the full enterprise, about 45% of our spend is on private sector. When you look at the enterprise services, that's where we get over 50% from there for exactly what you're talking about there. I don't think we've done the analysis of if we tried to do all this ourselves. Again, there's services that just make more sense to be able to procure and do from outside. You know, I think it's really a case-by-case basis on can we find someone else who can do it better. Email was a perfect example. At one point, everyone ran their own Exchange servers and did it themselves and had staff that did that. Instead, we consolidated that and gave it all to a private sector partner who could do that in the cloud.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I wasn't around when the minute started, but I imagine that part of the reason that this was a bipartisan effort and why it is moving forward is about improvement, right, like doing something better. And as a legislator, I think that's what we want to do is continue to improve things. And so my question is around, like, there's conversation that we've chatted around, like, staff shrinking and, you know, that may be some of the intention and we're not seeing that. But we also heard testimony from different commissions, boards, agencies that they had folks in-house doing these services that had other jobs that then, you know, maybe got to go back to doing their job when this went, you know, and Minute is starting to provide this. So could you speak to some of, like, the sophistication, the quality, the things that are really improved when you take this piece out and you put it into the avenue of Minute and speak to just the improvement, the quality. And you get at this with some of the slides, but I just want to bring us back to, like, the intention of where we're going.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and committee members, all of our IT projects, every one of them, are definitely centered around what an agency needs to do their business. And whenever you do those projects, you need agency subject matter experts to help build out a solution for whatever you're building. What was also reflected in the governor's budget beyond the request that we brought forward were a number of other
agency systems that are well past end of life, systems that are 30 years old, in some cases 25 years old, systems that can't be supported any longer. And there's also a period that we have to look at this and go, as responsible executives, we've got to take action upon some of those systems because they are at risk and they're putting our agency's business at risk. And a great chunk of the work that we need to do is, yes, we've got to manage costs. We've got to be responsible about where those expenditures go. And I welcome extending that discussion longer because I know we're hitting that point where we're getting close today. But we also, if I'm the CIO for, say, Target, pick whichever private industry firm that you want. If I'm the CIO and we squeeze every dime of cost out of there, but their bottom line shrinks because we're not delivering IT, I'm going to get fired immediately. It's what is the value that IT is bringing to the agency to make them be successful, and how do we measure that in government terms and be much better at delivering these solutions? We've got a lot of IT debt. When Minute came together, We fundamentally, Jesse and I, when we first came together as a team, I said, Jesse, we got to get our fundamentals right. We got to get our data centers consolidated. We've got to get our base infrastructure done right. We've got to gain those efficiencies. We've got to straighten out our billing so our customers understand it. We've got to do customer service better. I hired Tom Schaefer out of Code 42 because customer service is their forte. But once we get past this fundamental piece, we've got to move up into the solutions that provide our business partners real value, that we can deliver citizen-centric solutions, that we've got user interfaces that don't look like Pong, for crying out loud. We're going to have to update these applications, and we need to be a much more digital government, and I think that's a discussion we all need to have, is to where do we focus our effort. I spoke with Speaker Dowd the other night, and he talked about how he wants to become much more citizen-centric, and I welcome the work that committee will do. Also spoke with Tina Smith on the same night and talked to our many top-notch Minnesota IT companies around with the High Tech Association. We've got good people here. We've got good contractors in town. By the way, we've got some very good staff that work for us as well. We've got some amazing staff, and at any given time, like right now, there's over 300 of them that are eligible to retire, and those people have got a knowledge repository that I can't buy from any consulting firm. So we're going to have to act. We can't sit still. We've got a lot of work to do here as a team, and I welcome coming to this committee or meeting with any one of you individually to step up and be better as a technology organization.
Representative Olson. Representative
Uglum. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, sometimes I'm sorry we're so hard on you here, but it's very difficult questions. Lots of big money, lots of expansive growth, and it's our job to ask. With that, something a little simpler than Representative Vogel's question. On page 5 in the handout, you talk about how you provide local services to the agencies and things like that. And when you determine a need, you say you sit with the agencies and a chief business technology officer and determine the needs. My question to you is there ever anybody that says, no, you can't have your wish?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I say no often. I do. Or I also, maybe no is not the exact term. I give them options. There are some that are just so brutally expensive. Would that be a smart way to do it? Are there options within business process that we can fix that can actually just improve a business process without even doing an IT project? We'll often do that analysis ahead of time. And at other points, especially for major projects, we set up a governance-type structure which has both business and information technology on it, and we have those debates. And we have very rigorous debates around those.
Madam Chair?
Representative Ogle.
Thank you. I hope that that's the case, and sometimes we have explosive growth here, and people want a lot of IT is hot, and they want a lot of nice things, but, I mean, whether it be your cell phone or whatever. Second question. You talk about cost to the agencies, and cost is a direct pass-through to the agency, and you say they pay the exact expense. Could you define exact expense for me in terms of, are you adding an overhead factor. You have a cost. How do you determine that cost, and how do you arrive with the exact nomenclature?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, could I have Jesse respond to that? I want to make sure we're factually very precise on this.
Sure. Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, real quick back to your other question. That is one of our hopes, too, with the governance structure that we touched on earlier, is really bringing these agencies together. One of the benefits consolidation that you had asked earlier is you now have an application inventory of the state. You know how many applications are out there. And as we get into these questions of modernizing and redoing them, I think we, all of us, would miss an opportunity if we don't look at and question, do we need to replace the same thing? Or is there an opportunity now, instead of having 30 of these, whatever it is, to go down to maybe not one, but maybe two or three of them? And I really hope that we all are looking at that in the next coming years, because I see it as a huge opportunity now that we have that visibility, now that we're at a point where so much of that work needs to be able to be done, and I think that is one of the benefits that we can drive forward. The pass-through compared to the rates. So the rates, it's really a charge per volume that we would compute. The other one is if you as an agency decide I want 25 IT staff, you know, four developers, two DBAs, all that, their salary, what their actual expenses are with everything, and the managers that manage them and everything they have would be what we then charge, what they spent that time that month. That's what I mean by direct pass-through, is you literally look at, all right, this is the cost of those people, but it's not calculated into a rate that you're charging from that perspective.
Representative Oakland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, yes, the cost of those people, obviously you have salary, obviously you have fringes, and do you put an overhead factor on the cost of those people?
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, not directly on the people, no, we don't. One shift we did this year that had been a potential weakness that we had before is there are certain services that we have in Minute that service every IT employee, not just the central organization. Case in point, perfect example, one of these is HR, right? Regardless if you're a centralized employee or whether you're working at the agency, you still use this HR office. What had been called out to us in the past and had been concerned in the past is that we were fully burdening just the enterprise rates with that full cost of HR. Now what we're doing is saying by a metric of people, if you have X percent of people, be it an enterprise service or be it local, we spread that cost based on how many people you have there using that metric. So in that way that is added on, it's not just burdened onto the people. We actually call it out separate so people can see it, understand it, and what's in there. But we've done that to make sure that if you want more IT people, well, that means you're also using more of HR's time,
right,
that you're fully paying that equal share.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we're kind of running out of time, this is kind of a yes or no question, I guess. Do you have a five-year strategic security plan that's been vetted and ready to go so that we could properly use the money that the governor is requesting?
Briefly, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, yes. Yes, we'd be happy to. We would prefer to run through it with you privately, in that what we don't want to do is open ourselves up to being a target of any additional. But we have a five-year plan. It's been vetted. We also had another firm look at it one more time to make sure that it was current. And the results of that, I believe they have the results of that letter in your packet. I believe they described the plan as meticulous and under-resourced.
Representative Quam, last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you can answer offline. You're billing now for ongoing replacement, and there's two ways you can do that. Either that fund goes into a dedicated savings account to cover the future, so it's set aside, or it covers your burn rate for ongoing activities. So that's part of it. The other is you're either calculating that as a normative across all customers, or you're segregating it by type, or you have it individually Because of you, I have X amount of dollars. If you can have those type of descriptors, and if there are dedicated accounts, please give us a historic and current balance on that. So we'd like to be able to track that. And we don't want to have money sitting somewhere that we don't know what it's for. Thank you.
Mr. Ullman?
Madam Chair, members, yeah, we'll get back to you on that, absolutely. In fact, we can set up some time, sit down with Thomas Schaefer, who really has that area, so you can ask whatever questions you need.
Okay. Commissioner, final word?
Madam Chair, one last bit of clarification. As agencies need to have solutions, essentially what we do in IT is we put together a level of efforts around what they're looking for. We present those options to the agency, and those options require people usually to execute, and that's how we determine, or agencies determine, how much they're going to consume or not consume.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for coming today. I appreciate any other additional questions that you can answer as members have them. So thanks for your time. With that, members, we are adjourned.